Mia Love delivers a cease and desist order. Give me a break. She's going to lose that election. This is Jim DeVacus on the left.
Speaking of ridiculous things, Herbert is Trump. The DNC, oh no, they're terrible tricks. Stan McKay on the right.
Clinton campaign pulls at the heartstrings of LDS mission families. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center. I have on my left, representing the political left, Senator Jim DeVacus.
Good morning, everybody.
And he's on my left, too, but he definitely represents the political right, Representative Dan McKay.
Hey, good morning.
All right, you guys.
Did you catch that? She went opposite order.
Election
just
day.
Just to throw us off, Dan. And I notice, you notice, we've got to be on our toes today.
Some in our listening audience are like, what? What's Natalie doing?
What? Election day, less than 2 weeks away. I'm ready for some other programming on CNN, I might just add. Jim, what are your emotions telling you? What are you feeling at this time?
I think actually Democrats are going to do better both in Utah and nationally than we're seeing. And now hopefully that's not just the Democrat in me. I mean, I just sense that Trump has just been such an elephant in the wind that we're going to do reasonably well.
Do you know, Dan, I did something interesting. I looked at Moody's analytics projections of the presidential race state by state. And they do economic models state by state. So it's not polling. It's not public opinion. It's based on the economics of what they're seeing and you know, equations of correlation and what they expect. Anyway, turns out that the economic models are showing the exact same thing as the Real Clear Politics, you know, political polling is showing. Hmm. I think it's 333 electoral votes for Senator Clinton. I thought that was interesting, that the economics and the public opinion are in sync.
In sync. Yeah, that is. I mean, it's definitely a different way of looking at it compared to just polls and those kinds of things. I do know, you know, the polls, et cetera, everybody says, well, you know, you look at these things. But Nate Silver at 538.com, that's the – if I go to a website that I don't want somebody bending it right or bending it left, I go to Nate Silver and just kind of look at things, right? And he added a blog post actually just yesterday about the presidential race tightening up that Trump is within. He is actually leading in Florida. And he is up in Pennsylvania by like 1 point and down on a couple of others and down by 1 point in Ohio. And it was just a bunch of these weird, like Trump seems to have this rebirth coming on.
Well, and if we've learned anything, it's you can't predict what's happening in the American psyche. But I got to tell you, I have this real disappointment because in the last week I've interacted with two prominent international thinkers. One would be Edward Luce, who is the writer for the Financial Times. He was in town for the Utah Global Forum. And then I was with a Chairman Xu from Taiwan up at the university yesterday. But in both cases, one's a business leader and one is a commentator for the Financial Times. But in both cases, they talked about their frustration with these trade deals and the lack of U.S. leadership in the world. And it's very associated with the Trump-Bernie phenomenon. Because as we know, Senator Clinton was a TPP person until Bernie came along. Yeah. And so now we have our two leading candidates who are really talking about closing us off from the world. And I'm just hearing people say, hey, there's going to be trade deals. And it's just a matter of whether China leads or the U.S. leads.
You know, as something both of you said, it rings true with me. I mean, if for the next 2 weeks, Donald Trump would keep his mouth shut, would stay on script, would say...
In other words, became a totally different Donald Trump.
It became... I was going to say, who knows? But the problem is that we're not 2 weeks away anymore. You know, there's millions of votes that have already gone in.
Yeah.
So
I have.
It could still... I mean, I can foresee something happening, but it's a long run. But the interesting question is, what happens the day after the election? What's going to happen to the Utah Republican Party? What's going to happen to the National Republican Party? Are they going to be able to put all this together? Is Paul Ryan going to – that becomes an interesting
Dan, mix. And we Republicans always like to say, oh, but the Democrats have their problems too, you know, because of some of the division in that party. But it's nothing like what we're feeling. And
the dumpster fire of the Republican Party is really quite
bigger than ours for once.
Yeah, like you know, for example, well, and usually you guys are the ones throwing the fuel into the fire, right?
Right.
And for a change, we're actually fueling the fire ourselves.
Yeah.
Which is really quite interesting to see. A friend of mine put it, and who I, you know, a political advisor that I talk to is kind of a good friend. He put it this way. He said, "Look, you're really trying to decide what the Republican Party is going to be in the next evolution right now."
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, and that Trump really took advantage of the Republican Party's failure to change in the last 2 years. Because Reince Priebus, he was giving me a bunch of inside stuff, right? He's saying, look, Reince and those guys of the Republican Party, they all sat down, had this big focus group about what they wanted to be when they grew up and how they were going to get there.
This was after 2012, after
losing 2012. And they took none of those steps, and as a result, here we are.
Yeah. So I heard the quote of the week. I want to hear you guys' reaction to it. This was from Jason Perry, a colleague of mine at the University of Utah, but he was doing an interview. He runs the Hinckley Institute of Politics, an interview with a Canadian journalist, and the journalist said, "We don't know what you guys are doing down there, but it feels like you're in a frat house, and we're up here in the upstairs apartment, and you're burning the house down." And I thought it was pretty, because, you know, they're north of the border and they're above us. And apparently the Canadians are looking at the United States and just shaking their heads.
I think the world is.
The world is. It's embarrassing.
So, really?
Yeah. So
it's only embarrassing because they're used to tyrants coming in to clean up this mess.
I think
we don't have that construct.
I think
that's
they're used to our leadership in the world.
That leadership ebbs and flows as time moves on. I think you look at the natural outgrowth of having a democratic republic where we elect people, there is this kind of feeling that there's uncertainty always with America.
So I was in front
it's
of
like a hot mess.
I was in front of a group of business leaders this week, and you know, we basically were, and this is, you know, they're dominated by Republicans, but there was a mix. Pat Jones was in the room, a few others and whatnot. But in any case, I asked the question, what are we going to do about it? In other words, you know, these are the frustrations we have in our country, but what are we personally doing about it? And the comment I had was, I want to see us put more into education, because I think a lot of what we're seeing is a failure of public education in this country, both for an educated citizenry, but also for people that have the skills to have gainful employment in a world that's become globalized. Mm. Interesting, your reaction.
You know, I had my annual sit down with the LDS leaders, and I said, you know, you're missing the bandwagon here. I know you're an international church and Utah's just a small part of it and there's 15 million people. But I said, look at education in Utah because you're 70% there. And I know the growth rate may be big in Mexico and in Africa, but the wallet is still the Intermountain West. And look at achievement scores. We've been able to fudge through this for 25 years. We can't do that anymore. The big loser in all of this is going to be you. If we don't get those test scores up, if we don't start educating those kids, if we don't stop the blah, 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 and start actually putting money in and educating kids. You know, Herbert, for all of his "I'm Mr. Education Governor," you know, we're $83 less per child than when he took office. I mean, that's disgraceful.
Okay, I'm just going to let Jim jump into this diatribe alone. Because he gets these meetings, by the way, with the LDS leaders, right? And he's not even a member of the church, which I think is awesome, right? It says something to who they are and who they're reaching out to. Because
they did bring up something called tithing for non-members, which I didn't see, and they wanted to test out my reaction on it.
Jim, look, I wish I had a graph here and I could show it for the radio audience so they could compare it. But our scores have actually gone up over the last 25 years as far as achievement goes on standardized and other localized tests. But where you are right is our funding has largely decreased on a per-.
Dan, what about my idea that not – Jim brought it to Utah, and I don't mind that. But I think what we're seeing is a lot of people who have been left behind by this economy. And so we have this class of people that are mad at international trade agreements. They're mad at immigrants taking their jobs. They're just mad. And it's because they lack the skills to make money to feed their family.
Natalie, not that that's not true.
Yeah.
But that same class of people was here 50 years ago.
Yeah.
That same class.
They were working at Geneva for $20 or $25 an hour in the 80s. And now There's nowhere for them to go.
But to Natalie's point, the globalization of things has changed that economy and moved it for all those guys. So I think there's right to be frustration. I just say they've kind of been there for a while, and I'm not saying it's fair. But
we're solving problems here on both sides of the aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the productive middle, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We should probably talk about something other than the election, but there's still more, you guys. And I I want to hear your predictions on voter turnout. And especially, I'll just mention this, ballots have come to my home and I voted. My husband hasn't. My son hasn't yet. But I've sealed the envelope at this point. Have you guys voted?
Mine is in.
Okay. Jim?
My envelope is in the car.
Okay.
So it's half voted.
All right. Dan, what do you think is going to happen with voter turnout? I mean, it's such a strange election year. If you don't have a high voter turnout, that'll help.
Well, the joke, you know, and I think I've told you guys this before. The joke is, you know, the Republican Party several years ago under Thomas Wright as the party chair's direction, they spent all this time, effort, resources trying to get people to vote by mail. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the Republicans had a lead into 2012. Mm-hmm. And conspiracy theorists.
You're saying lead in the percent
of people that were voted by mail.
Got
and
it.
The people who were getting their ballots by mail, they were returning their ballots and were voting. And we were getting new people to vote by mail. Right.
Yeah.
And I think the Democrats saw that and said, hey, wait a minute. We can do something about that. And so Sherry Swenson of the Democratic Salt Lake County just said, you know what? We're going to make the whole county vote by mail. So while Thomas Wright registered the Republicans to vote by mail through hard work and effort, Sherry Swenson did it just by sheer administrative edict, which required no hard work or effort. But that's the Democratic way, Jim.
Jim, you deserve that.
The legislature made it all possible, so I want to thank them.
I
just have two things to say about voting. First, Democrats, vote right now. Republicans who are going to vote for Donald Trump, be sure and get out and vote
the
by the November 27th deadline.
That's good.
I'm totally shocked.
Hey, so we can't go through the program without talking about Evan McMullen. And I think the way to talk about it is this woman who shares my first name, Natalie Gordon, who was the Davis County vice chairwoman, who decided that she supported independent Evan McMullen and, you know, in her private Twitter account puts the McMullen logo. And I guess Davis County Central Committee folks basically said she should lose her office. She was on the Doug Wright Show on this.
Do not step outside of the Reich.
Yeah.
If you step outside of the Reich, we will have you on our side.
Jim? Is this just politics, or is this behaving badly?
Sorry, Jim, that was a really good German impersonation.
That's what it was.
You shouldn't come after it. I thought it was Obama.
I couldn't tell. Utah, and that wasn't Utah County. You know, Utah County is.
Yeah, this is Davis
doing
County.
That. That's Davis County. I had nothing to say about all that.
Yeah,
Republican
tricky.
Internal.
Let's go to the Mia Love Doug Owens.
That's got to be the first time you've I would been. Never comment on Republicans.
Mia Love Doug Owens race. Love's campaign sent a cease and desist letter to local TV stations about a commercial that. I guess it was backed by a House Majority PAC in the Democratic Party that takes her on for improperly using her congressional account to pay for travel, Jim.
Cease and desist.
Can you do that in German?
Imagine that.
There's a Gestapo sound.
I'm going to sound like Donald Trump here, but I got to question the polls that show Doug, the last one I saw, down by 8 or so against Mia. I think there's internal polls. Because Paul Ryan marched in a couple of days ago with a cool $1 million TV buy. Mm. And they don't just do that if everything is coasting along at 8 or 10 points. So I think that could be closer. And this this non-Republican turnout, we could wake up with a new congressman.
Hey, Dan, I want you to – you and I have talked about Tim Kaine doing this op-ed in the Deseret News. Jim, I don't know if you read it, but it was just a very skillfully written opinion editorial that dealt with his missionary service in Honduras.
It was so kiss-up. I mean, that
it
first –
It was.
Because I don't comment on internal Democratic policy.
I mean, it starts – when it's the VP for the Democratic Party starting out by talking about when parents drop off their sons at the MTC in Provo. When does a VP candidate talk like that to Utahns from the Democratic Party?
You know, in a way, what is impressive about that is not that the – what's in there. It is that the Democrats are so organized.
They're paying attention.
And they can flip I mean, that's what Trump doesn't have. And that kind of experience and the ability to take a state and figure out, okay, what do we do?
It's the second one they've, you know, run, one from, you know, Senator Clinton and this one came. Dan, it was titled, Why Religious Mission Service Matters to the United States.
It was, in my opinion, I have rarely seen a political masterpiece written like that was. And I wish it was my party. And the reason why I say it's a political masterpiece, because I don't know that pandering can be done any more effectively than it was done there. And it was done in such a – I'd say it was kind of obvious, but even then
it was so well done, sincere.
Yeah,
it was so well done.
Anyway.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Jim, I want to hear your breakdown of Equality Utah suing the state school board. I think it'd be good for our listeners to hear about this.
So in the mid-90s, we passed something that is now called the – Don't Say Gay, or what is it called?
No, I thought it was No Promo Homo.
No Promo Homo. So we have had...
Sorry, I know you're...
No, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, you know.
Do you want me to give the rundown on how Equality Utah feels about... No, I'm just kidding.
No, I mean, look, here's what happens in the real world. Teachers cannot not only not say the word gay, but when there are children with gay parents... There have been at least two cases where they have stopped children from talking about their parents because the law is quite explicit on who's responsible and what may and may not be said. And any promotion of homosexuality, according to some teachers, at least in their head, by saying, I have two mommies, you are promoting homosexuality. Not only do they lose their jobs, but they are subject to criminal. So this is like an old appendage that really is in action in school districts, and it ought to be taken out. And I hope that the legislature just takes care of it and we don't go through another dumb lawsuit where we lose. I don't have a lot of hope for that, but that would be the right thing to do.
Well, so Jim, look, I'm not going to argue that the policy is the right thing because I think if a kid has a question, you know, you got to be able to answer that question if you're a teacher, right? You're not going to say there's no answers for you here. Go look on the internet because I think that may produce even more conflicting signals. What I will say is, and this is where I understand where the policy was coming from back in those days. I don't know yet how I feel about it because I haven't seen the bill itself or read the law. But I will say this. Reproductive rights, as they're taught in schools, is done in a scientific way, right? And it's centered around sexual reproduction. Mm-hmm. And it's not around, you know, some agenda. It's not around anything
else.
Social policy or any of these other things. And so it's got teachers teaching in a place that is safe where they can talk about how does A plus B equal C? And that's how you get to reproductive rights or reproductive education. The question I have, Jim, for you is take that policy away and you're a teacher and the question comes in, are you worried that that will create a conversation that they need to go and talk to their parents? Or do you think this policy was passed as a non-proselyting for the homosexual cause? Is that really what the fear was back then? And are you fear that that's not
there's
the case
three
today?
Links that I'll send you guys, and there are hours of the debate. It will... This is, again, a long, long, long time ago, but it will chill you to hear what they were saying in 1996. So, look, the whole idea of reproduction education is one thing. The question is, should a teacher not be allowed to have a picture of their husband, if they're female, or their family on their desk? Or should we say some families can be on there, but others can't? I mean, I understand you don't sit
down,
you don't sit down with
that issue's been decided.
Decided.
Yeah.
But you don't sit down with kids and talk to them about at least little kids and go. I trust our teachers, basically. You know, I think it's very few of them that are going to go over the line. And we ought to have something there when they do, when they start talking about things that ought not to be talked about. But this is pretty common sensey, I think, where we're going.
Yeah.
I've had to answer these questions for my kids, Jim. My kid comes home and says, Dad, what's a lesbian? Mm-hmm. Right? And I've got to explain, that situation. and those family relations. And, you know, it's not an easy conversation because I got to be honest, I don't necessarily understand it all the way, but I can understand the uncomfortableness as an educator of trying to answer that question because it is not an easy question. But I think, though, I say that it's more uncomfortable for our generation, Jim. At I would say, you know, 30 and above, maybe even 35 and above. But under that, everybody knows it already. And everybody's already, you know, those questions are already answered. And I think the concerns about it are a generation away from just being completely
just
irrelevant.
And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but one other thing. And that is there are gay kids in Utah's classrooms at all ages everywhere. And they need to also recognized or be recognized. Remember, we are, if not one, we're two or three in youth suicide. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we are just cut off. And we cut these children off, too.
Yeah, can't. Yeah.
And that's something you can only speak to.
Hey, guys, we are approaching the legislative session. I always think of the November interim as the big last one, you know, before the session. What would you tell our listeners is percolating out there? What are the big things they should be thinking about?
They don't tell me the big things. They
got to go to the Republican on this.
And I can't talk about the big things. So
okay, next
that's a great
thing.
Question. What do you got?
You want to talk about the Utah Jazz?
Hey, did you notice this morning that as we were driving into Salt Lake that there was those Herbert is Trump signs?
I noticed them everywhere.
They were everywhere.
What do you know about them? What's the...
I just know that late at night when they were strapping those things down, there was a lot of maniacal laughter. Because, come on, Jim, you know
clearly,
it's somebody with Weinholt's campaign.
No, it isn't.
It has to be.
It is totally the right, I would guess. Or,
no, come on. Don't do
you
that.
You know where they started? They started right next to the Gary Johnson headquarters. Clearly, Herbert is not Trump. Herbert has black hair.
Hey, I want to give Herbert props. I was at the Utah Global Forum this week, and he announced the formation of an exploratory committee to study the feasibility of an inland port.
Yeah, but it's your research. You have
yeah,
to
but I give him
that.
Props.
Okay,
well, I give
for
him
following your research.
Well, I give him props for a forward-looking, you know, making an announcement.
What does
just,
that even mean? Are we
going to
dredge
rankings.
All the way from California to get a
it's
port
an
here?
It's an inland port. It's a dry
We're
port, Jim.
Here already.
Holy. It's a dry port.
So, I mean, sorry.
No, Herber, you can go back to the you can Herber. Go back to the November interim if you want.
I just like these little. Thank you. I just like these little tricks. Like as soon as I was pulling in, I pulled over, and I took a picture of it. And the first person I thought to send this to was Jim. And Jim's response was, "Oh, you know, yeah, he thinks it's somebody from the far right that's trying to put Herbert in a box that he's Trump. This is totally Jim's party." And now the thing I'm going to laugh about is they cried party foul when people were saying, remember the signs, and I can show it to you guys, Matheson is Pelosi. And those were the signs that they were like, oh my gosh, the place is on fire. This is terrible. And of course, I remind Jim of this morning. Guess what what was your response to me?
I can't remember.
His response was classic. He's like, there are plenty of people in my district who are begging to have those signs so they can say that Matheson's finally come around.
Yeah. That is true.
That's true.
But I don't think – I actually think it is the Libertarians or somebody else.
No.
No, you're pretty sure it's our guys?
It's got to be your
I'll
guys.
Call Michael Weinholz.
The signs are blue. Right, I mean, that's
it's
your party.
Clever.
I don't know.
Okay. And I like how you pivoted to not answer anything about what's happening in the majority party
how about
in
this?
Our session.
In January, we can have this conversation because we'll be much closer to the session. But right now, all bets are off.
You know, one thing I hope Utah starts to address is Medicaid expansion. I mean, we still don't have it. We don't have the waivers. There doesn't look like we're ever going to get the waivers.
Jim, I can honestly say that's one thing that is not on
is
the
not going to happen. And, Jim, you say that right as they just announced these horrendous price
numbers.
Increases
exactly.
in Obamacare.
Just on the exchange, 25% over, Jim. Come on. Even your party, Hillary, is saying, please. Obamacare is a mess.
I agree. Let's dump Obamacare.
Yeah, you want single payer.
We just go to single payer. That's what
Dan,
we should have
Dan, what
gone.
Do you want to gripe about today?
Jim.
Jim, what do you want to gripe about?
Can I just
Jim,
gripe about Jim?
I wanted to gripe about Jim, too. We can actually do this.
You guys split up. What do you want, Dan?
I think if I was to look at all the things that we've talked about and all the things we haven't talked about, I think my gripe is that there are plenty of people who, despite the urgings to vote, will not.
Yeah.
And I plead with people. Look,
and it's not to protest. It's just they just aren't going to take the time.
But if even
my vote
if you're
doesn't
a protest
matter.
Person yeah. and say, I won't protest, fine. Don't leave your local candidates in a lurch because you can't decide who your president wants to be. Fine. You don't like president? Yeah. Leave it blank.
Yeah. If you don't want to fill out all those 15 judges, leave them blank.
Well, there's a couple that we do need to get rid of, but that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, but fair enough. But yeah. It's just sort of like, just go vote.
Just
do
go.
At whatever level you want to engage, engage.
My gripe goes to goes right to health care. You want to know why it's going up? You want to know?
He's
Aetna.
Done some studying in the last minute.
Because the government's involved?
Aetna. Their president's making $90,000 a day.
That is a
Centre, $42,000 a day. United Healthcare, $35,000 a day. $104,000 for Cigna. Give me a break. Who is worth $57,757 a day?
The source on his table, by the way, is Democrats for Health Care. So
but Danny's got a good point if the data is accurate. Hey, my gripe concerns Real Salt Lake. They have such a talented team to have had a season that they've had so many ties and losses, and I'm just a little bit frustrated for my home team.
You're a soccer people.
I'm a soccer nut. So.
Do you care, Dan? Oh, sorry.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Programs produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you.